Hey, Steve, likewise. Thanks so much. And, yeah, we're obviously excited, chopping at the bit. You know, it's been weird for all of us since the middle of March, as I say, especially for those of us that work, you know, in this business in terms of baseball, not being able to do what we do. So be able to get back to work is going to be really special.
Yeah, no question about it. In spring training, did you get a feel for at least the guy, Derek Shelton?
Yeah, I think so. I had a chance to meet with him a couple of times, nothing formal. But I tell the story, Steve, what I really admired about him, and many things. I could just tell right away he's just kind of a regular guy. I think the players could really relate to him. There's nothing phony at all about the guy. The manager's office at the clubhouse, what is known now as the McKechnie Field Clubhouse at Lecom Park. The manager's office is situated that if you go into the clubhouse, it's the last door on the left down this one little hallway before you open up a set of double doors that will take you just beyond the right field fence at Lecom and by the bullpens. So there are different entryways and exits, but for me, if I went through the clubhouse, and I did that most every morning, I would usually take that way to head out on toward the field. It was just the easiest and less cumbersome. So as I walk by that manager's office, I always just take a quick peek. I don't stick my head in, but as I'm walking by, I just look to my left. And if he happened to be looking up, I didn't want to disturb him, but if he's looking up, of course, I would say hi. But usually, you know, these managers are busy, even though it's spring training. They're deep into the lineup card or notes, or they might be texting someone. Heck, there might be someone in there he's meeting with. But most every single time when I went past, I would take a sneak peek, and most of the time he had his head down. But without fail, about five more steps got me to the double doors. So I walked past his office, take a quick look, would hear almost every single morning, "Hey, Brownie, what's up? Hey, Brownie, how you doing?" And you know, I of course would respond in kind. I wouldn't walk back. I'd just say, "Hey, Shelty, hey, Derek," and keep walking. But I just think that tells so much about someone. It just, you know, there's nothing scripted. Everyone, no matter what you do, is important. You know, too many people, you know this, having worked in this business so long, as have I, that people, I think, tend to gravitate to you, not just some, not a lot, but maybe gravitate to you because of what you do, not who you are.
That's right.
And so there's an agenda of some sort. You know, maybe they're trying to schmooze you because they don't want you to say anything bad about them on the air. I don't know, but this guy is the exact opposite. There is no agenda. That's the bottom line with him.
60 games is very interesting. And I think the perfect example, which has been cited many times, is that the Washington Nationals were 19-31 through 50 last year. So 60 can also mean that you're the one that gets off to the hot start. And guess what? You're the 31-19 team through 50 and in a spot. Maybe over 162 it doesn't play out. So how interesting is this 60 games in 66 days to you because of all the possibilities?
Yeah, well, for me, it's really interesting, Steve. I'm going to call this the great asterisk season for the rest of our lives. We'll remember it because it is so unusual. You throw everything out the window. I mean, this is other than the fact that they're still playing with bases within 90 feet of each other, and the pitcher's mound is 60 feet, 6 inches to home plate, still using wooden bats. Other than that, the game is going to definitely take on a different look this year. And so I'm just kind of throwing my hands up and saying, heck with it. I'll go with whatever we got, including a designated hitter, including starting a man at second base in extra innings, including this newfangled schedule where we're playing just our division and the American League Central. This year we were scheduled to play the American League East. Mm-hmm. Basically all bets are off. And as you say, a 60-game sprint is way different because I guarantee you can look at even the worst Pirate seasons of all time, and because it's 162 games, you can find a stretch of 60 games where they played really well or decent enough. Just pull out a batch of 60 somewhere, and you'll find something, usually, whether it's a mediocre year or a good year. And so, as you say, if you get off to a really good start, all of a sudden you're in it. I mean, if the first couple weeks you play really good baseball and you're 14 games into a 60-game schedule, all of a sudden you're in it. So, and the other unusual thing about this, Steve, is that after 1 month, at the end of August, there's a trade deadline.
Right.
So now, if you're within a couple games, why not go get somebody to help you put you over the top? So it's highly unusual, highly unique. And like I said, I'm just going to go out and have fun with it because there's nothing else we can do.
Right. Exactly. I'll tell you a quick story because besides doing Penn State football and Penn State basketball, I broadcast the State College Spikes minor league team since they started in 2006. And they, you know, they have the DH in this league because they're trying to develop pitchers and develop hitters, so they have a DH. But they instituted that, put the runner on second and start extra innings with the runner on second. And the first game of the season, the game is tied at the end of nine. So they do it.
Oh, my gosh.
So everybody's looking around like, okay. Now they're playing Williamsport. Okay, and the way they start the season is they'll play the first game at State College, the second game's at Williamsport. The second night, Greg, they're tied at the end of nine.
No.
Now this is in Williamsport. They put the runner on second, and the fans down below the booth, down beyond broadcasting, starts chanting, "That's not baseball. That's..."
That is classic.
Now, you won't have to deal with the fans. There won't be any fans to deal with.
Oh, my gosh, that is classic. Well, hopefully, I mean, it's funny. Now, did they get used to it? I assume they did.
You know what? It's funny. I'll tell you from the broadcaster's point of view. When it was first put in, I thought, nah, this isn't really, that's not my cup of tea. Now, would I prefer after 2 years, Greg, that you play it out? Yes, because I'm just an old-time baseball guy. But you do get used to it. How about that? You get used to it. It doesn't mean you have to love it, but you get used to it.
Yeah, that's kind of the way I'm feeling. Although I'm not going to give in to the DH. I'm going to accept it for this year, because I've had some people, fans, email me, some acquaintances text me or whatnot, and say what, and I'm on Twitter at times. I will say, unfortunately, because they can beat you up pretty good.
Yeah,
and I've had people say, nice knowing you. I guess you'll be quitting now, because you hate the DH so much, so you're certainly not going to broadcast the DH. I've always said that until it's actually etched in stone and actually a part of the National League, I won't accept it.
Right.
And now, in this case, it's in here temporarily. And my hope is, Steve, that National League fans everywhere who were maybe on the fence, because hardcore National Leaguers know what I'm talking about. It's a different game. It's more than just, and I've heard this age-old tired argument that, people just don't like to see the pitcher hit.
Mm-hmm.
But there's way more to it than that, way more strategy than that. And my hope is that people get a taste of it, and afterward, everybody be a clear head, objective mind, take a look at it and say, you know what? Nah, I like the old National League. Let's stick with it. So anyway, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, exactly. I think we'll find out. It'll be at least a good experiment to see who would be who would be a couple of leading candidates. So since you got to play with this rule, you have to have a couple of logical candidates that can fill it on a regular basis. Who might that be?
And that's what's so interesting about it, because one of the arguments people have had is it would be so exciting, I've heard people say, to have the DH in the National League, because then you have a guy that's up there, a real power hitter. Rather than the pitcher, you're going to have that guy come to the plate every four at bats. No, that's not the case, because most teams don't have, there are only like two or three, even the American League, true designated hitters, like Nelly Cruz of the Twins this past year.
That's a good point.
There are only two or three. When it first started back in the early 70s, the idea was, it'll be a high paying job for an exciting power hitter. And it maybe for a while was that to a degree, but now it's basically morphed into a position that allows the manager in the American League and now the National League to basically, it's a day of rest for someone. Mm-hmm. So that's what Shelton's going to do. He's going to use a bunch of different guys in there. Josh Bell would be the obvious choice because he's not a good defensive first baseman. Right. But Derek Shelton has said, well, we'll have let Bell have a day off now and again. Colin Moran will have a day off now and again. He'll be the DH. I say day off because for me it's a day off. Maybe not for them because they still come to the plate.
Right.
But if they're not going out in the field, they're it's a day off. So, he's gonna rotate it and you know that I will admit that's a positive for players that get a chance to get off their feet for a time. They don't play, you know, nine innings every day for, you know, a whole 162 game or 150 game season, whatever the case might be. So that's a positive, but there won't be, at least for the Pirates, and I would suspect this will hold true for most National League teams because it is the case in the American League, there really is no true DH on this Pirates team.
Well, and in fact, you know, I've told everybody for years that for every David Ortiz and Edgar Martinez, which are the logical and Hall of Fame type of DHs, there's about 50 Gary DeSarcinas that fill that role.
Oh, here. That is bingo. You nailed it. It is so true. That's the whole point.
Yep, exactly. Okay, the pitching staff. What's the lean on how the rotation can look for this team going forward?
Well, I would say, you know, in spring training, if you were suggesting a possible weak link or maybe the biggest question mark, it was probably the rotation. It was bad last year. Trevor Williams slipped considerably. Tyone got hurt. Archer was bad. Musgrove was a little inconsistent, but pretty good. Mitch Keller did not perform as well for a former number one. And so going into the season and even the spring training, we were wondering what it might be like, hoping Archer would bounce back. Well, as it turns out, Archer gets hurt, has season-ending surgery during the shutdown, thoracic outlet syndrome surgery. And so he's out for the rest of the season. And so now you're not necessarily in a scramble mode, but I think you're in a hopeful mode and hoping that Oscar Marin, the new pitching coach, can work some magic with the new analytics. And I will say, as much as I loved Ray Searidge, the longtime Pirate pitching coach, and he was tremendous.
Yeah.
And I don't know beans about the art of pitching or the metrics or anything else, the dynamics of it. I will say I do not recall as many pitchers, really at any time for the Pirates, speaking as glowingly about one man. I am amazed about it. Each and every one of them. And it's not just a cookie cutter thing. It's not just, oh, he's great. You know, he really pumps you up.
Yeah.
Each pitcher has broken down what this guy has done for them specifically. And so you'll get a different answer from each pitcher about what Marine has found. So maybe maybe they have found this guy. John Wehner has a real good friend in the Texas Rangers organization who was a Pirate pitching coach for a time. I knew him well, Jeff Andrews.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been a longtime pitching coach now in Texas for their coordinator. And when the Pirates hired Marine, John reached out to Jeff and said, you know, give me the lowdown on the guy. You know, is he real, fake? What is he? He goes, this guy is the best I've ever seen. He's unbelievable. So who knows? We will certainly be hopeful that he has found, and if he is able to do these things, and Ben Sherrington, the new general manager, has certainly brought on even more analytics than we've had before. I mean, he's brought everything into the fray. Then maybe it works, and Musgrove takes a big step, and a guy like Mitch Keller, who, you know, was only a month last year, and I don't think that was a fair assessment to put the onus on him because he came up and he didn't pitch well in September. I've seen too many former number ones, position players and pitchers fail early on and stumble around, and then all of a sudden he finds himself. So I think I'm still very confident in Keller, and Trevor Williams. is a guy. Those three have a chance, I think. And Derek Holland, who knew Maureen from his Texas days, if he's anything like he was a couple of years ago, that's a veteran left-hander who could do wonders. And I still like Chad Kuhl and Stephen Brault.
Yep.
And they're talking about piggybacking them. I like them individually. So, you know, you look at it that way, all of a sudden, it's not such a bad staff.
One final question for you, Greg, then I'll let you go, and it deals with Ben Cherington. First of all, Neil Huntington did a really terrific job in his long tenure with the Pirates. It's easy when somebody's gone to say, well, see, I mean, that's not my style, because you can see the things that he did. Ben Cherington, though, is the next man that's in. He took a last-place team as a general manager in 2012 and transformed them into a 2013 world champion. So he's done this before. What's it like being in an organization with this kind of fresh start with somebody that has been there before?
Well, you know, first impressions are I like him a lot. I will admit that I see a lot of Neil Huntington in Ben, mm-hmm. which I like, because I really like Neil Huntington. And I think it was just a situation where maybe they needed a fresh look. They needed a new leadership at the top. And if they were going to hire a new president, the new president was going to hire a new GM. I think that probably is logical. And I think that's what happened. And I will say that Ben's also brought in he's not afraid. I guess for me, maybe down the road, it's possible. And I mean, this not be fair to Neil, but it's possible that Neil got just a little timid in terms of wanting to really roll the dice. That especially was true when he either decided on his own or so many voices in and out of the organization forced his hand to make that big trade 2 years ago with Archer.
Yeah, that's you're going to reference that, yes.
Yeah, and so after he made that deal and it fell through, I think he was probably not going to make another trade. Now Ben comes in. I think Ben, he's been known as a guy who's a bit of a gambler, not afraid to roll the dice. We saw that in the drafts that he waited, the first trade he made for Marte, two very young, high upside prospects. And he also has brought in, as I said, even more from the analytics standpoint, and really believes in that. And the other thing I'll say, you mentioned, Steve, the fact that this guy's won a world championship, and a lot to do with the other championships on that Blue Jays team, and a lot to do with helping the Blue Jays take a gigantic step,
yes,
before coming to Pittsburgh.
Yep.
He would not have come to Pittsburgh if he didn't, A, number one, believe he could help turn this thing around, and B, he wasn't going to come for peanuts. They were going to have to pay him.
Yep.
And so for all the people that continue to rip on Bob Nutting, and I'll defend them till the cows come home, Bob Nutting just, in one full swoop when the season ended, ate $19 million. He just swallowed it.
Yep.
And said, heck with it, we need to turn things around. So he's paying $19 million out to people that aren't working for the team anymore. And then on top of that, he goes out and gets a proven guy in Travis Williams, who helped with the Penguins Stanley Cups and then was hired by the Rangers Hockey Club to help them. He brings him back to Pittsburgh, and he hires Ben Cherington, a proven GM. He is spending a lot of money for a guy who supposedly doesn't spend a lot of money.
Right. Greg, tremendous to hear you. Can't wait to hear with the season beginning. That'll be a great sign. And as you always know, tremendous respect on this end for the great work you do.
Well, you know, Steve, it goes both ways, man. And I'm looking forward to hearing you and the Lions too, man. The Nittany Lions. I can't wait.
Appreciate it so much, Greg. Be
Thanks
safe.
A lot.
We'll talk soon.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks.